Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott.
Hey!
Sean Preece.
Cold.
And Tim Schwartz.
Hello!
Hello, welcome along again. Yes, here we are with another hour of technology news. We made it in from the cold. I have to tell you guys, thank goodness our show is on a Tuesday, because if we had been on a Wednesday or a Thursday, we wouldn't have managed it this week, because it's been horrendous in this country. Tim, you don't know what weather is in America.
I beg to differ about that, but definitely not having the dramatic, crazy weather that you guys are having there right now.
It's like proper weather, isn't it, Sean? I mean, it's like that kind of weather we see on the other countries get. You know, when we watch those programs about how bad weather is in other countries. We got that.
I know. I tell you how bad it is, Stephen. I was unable to order a pizza and get it delivered the other day. It's the end of the world as we know it.
It's all over.
I totally, totally feel your pain. I couldn't get any ordering done from Amazon. I mean, it was just, to me, that was it. The zombie apocalypse can happen now because it's over.
You're going to get a phone call from Amazon. They're worried about you because you haven't spent money.
Yeah, they were going to send me a parcel. Food parcel from the Amazon Red Cross. Okay, so yeah, hello guys. How are we all this week? Are we well? Are we happy? Are we a bit warmer?
Doing well.
I'm getting over it now. I'm getting used to it. It's quite nice for the peace, you know? No one's out and about, so it's nice and quiet anyway.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. But we have got a lot to get through this week. We're going to be hearing from a listener who wants to follow up on last week's review of the HomePod that Garth Humphreys did with a few thoughts of his own. Looking forward to hearing that. Also, we're going to be checking out the latest news, including a new app just launched from Microsoft to help us better understand our surroundings. So all to come on this week's Tech Talk. We kick things off with one big story this week, and that is, of course, the news that Microsoft have announced a new app called Soundscape. And this app is for us. Hurrah!
God bless them.
For blind and partially sighted people. God bless their multicoloured socks, I guess, at Microsoft. Yeah, it is great news. Another app for blind people that they've launched. Seeing AI, of course, was the first. This is the second one. And it brings together a lot of work that they've done with two charities, actually. Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco and Guide Dogs here in the UK. And lots of work has been going on behind the scenes. I'm sure we're going to talk more about this in far more detail about these companies' involvements and charities' involvements with Microsoft over the next few weeks. But for now, I just thought we'd dive right into the app itself. You've both had a chance to try it. I haven't, because I've been unable to get out of my house for the past week. So up until today, I haven't really had a chance to even use the app properly other than turn it on. But you guys have tried it. What's your initial thoughts? Tim, I know you've tried it out.
Yes, I have tried it out, Stephen. And I have to say, again, a very good job by Microsoft making a completely accessible app for people that are blind and visually impaired. And they do a good job walking you through not just how to use the app, but also showing you what's useful about the app, so you can go in and find out information about your surroundings. Now, I do have to say, you would want to use stereo headphones when you're using this app, and even something maybe bone conducting or something off the ear, just to make sure that you can hear your surroundings. But that being said, you will hear things coming up in your left side. It'll play in your left earbud. If it's on your right side, it'll play in the right, or even if it's, you know, kind of up and to the right, it'll be spatially where you think it should be, which is just amazing that they've been able to do that, giving you information about what's around you. You can drop waypoints, so if you want to say, okay, this is where my destination is, it'll give you a beacon so that you can find what you're looking for. Now, it doesn't add like a turn-by-turn GPS or anything, so you do still have to use some other, you know, third-party app or device for that. But just for the simple, you know, helpful navigation of your surroundings and discovery of your surroundings, it's a very nice app, at least from the little bit that I've used so far.
Yep, I've got to agree. I haven't gone into depth with this thing. I just used it as I was taking a walk up the shop just to try it out. And I was really impressed. Now, very simple app, but it just seemed to work really well. It's the first time I've used an app like this. So you're walking down the street and it will say coming up to an intersection and it will say, let's say Tech Talk Drive is on your left and that will be in your left ear.
It's a great street. And brilliant place to live.
That's a beautiful street. And Sean Priest Avenue is straight ahead.
Terrible area. So, awful.
Not sure about that part of town, now.
And then when you actually turn onto the street, it says you are now on Tech Talk Drive, heading south. Look, this all sounds really simple, but what makes this different is it just seems really responsive. It seems to know exactly which way you're going all the time. On other apps, I've found that if I suddenly change direction, I'm walking back the other way, it takes a while for it to catch up. I'm never quite sure which way I'm meant to be going. Sometimes I think, do I need to get the phone out, hold it in my hand, or is it okay in my pocket? But with this app, it just seems to work really well. There's not a huge amount of information. It's not going to tell you, oh, there's a coffee shop on your left here. Not yet, anyway. But it was, as I was walking around the streets, it was telling me what street I was crossing, what street was coming up, and just that information and knowing it was accurate, and it, you know, because it was a route I knew it was accurate, it just seemed really, I don't know, I had confidence in it, and that, I think that is one of the best things about it. I was really impressed.
I'm actually quite surprised, because I called you over the weekend and you said, yeah,
oh, no,
whatever. Another app, I didn't. Great. You weren't very impressed
news.
By this. I call fake news in here. No, you were not impressed at all. You weren't sure about this at all, were you? You thought, oh, here we go. But you seem quite impressed.
I am very impressed. But yes, now I tell you why I was skeptical, because as soon as I hear 3D audio, I think, oh, it's just going to be a load of beeps and noises in my ears saying, you know, you're getting close to something or other. But it is, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure of the usefulness of the 3D audio aspect of it. If it just said this street is coming up on your left, I think that would be fine. But then again, I haven't used it enough, so I will delve into that a bit more. But when it said 3D audio, I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be one of these apps with loads of bleeps and beeps, and I don't know what they mean. And but it actually talks to you. It is just like, it is like Blind Square, which I use as a benchmark, if you like, for other apps. But it just works really well. Like I say, it's the confidence aspect for me. I think it just seems really accurate, which I was surprised about.
Yeah, it is very Blind Square light in a way, because it doesn't offer you all the additional information that Blind Square gets from Foursquare. So you're not getting menus and websites and things like that. And you're not being able to move it from Blind Square to a GPS app, you know, from within Microsoft Soundscape. So they haven't tied it to that yet, although they obviously do recommend you use something like that along with this. But what I really liked is that, yes, you do get the information about what's on your left or on your right. And I agree, Sean, I don't know that it's that important to have it in 3D, you know, around me. Just telling me left to right is probably enough, but it is something different. It is something new. And to be able to tell me that there is this particular place or destination, you know, coming up on those directions is helpful. Also, the other thing I found very helpful that I know a lot of blind people will like is that it does tell you about bus stops and where they are in relative location to you. So you can actually drop a position marker at a bus stop so you can find that again. So just being able to find things like that they have in their database that they're offering you, I think is helpful. And unlike Blind Square, it is free, which I know Steven likes a lot. So, you know, being a lighter version and free, you can't go wrong with that.
My favorite price. Billy got in touch with us. Billy Burrell got in touch by email. Oh, no. Stop that. Stop that right now.
Oh, let it play. We all love the jingle.
No, it's not time for emails yet. No.
Okay.
That was fired off. That was like an Amazon Echo moment right there. I said email. And there it goes. Yeah, it's just when I use the word. Right, stop that. Right, well, Billy was in touch this week, and thank you for doing that. He says, you may already be aware of the app, but I wanted to let you know so that other listeners who perhaps don't know about it yet can try it. The app Soundscape was demonstrated on the latest Blind Abilities podcast, and it's called Soundscape, a 3D mapping audio system from Microsoft that gives you an overview of your surroundings, as we were saying, in conjunction with your usual mobility aids. Now, that's a key point, actually, in this. This is not a replacement for a cane or a guide dog at all. But as you guys say, the app uses a series of tones to let you know of things around you, bus stops, and beeps to signal that you're headed in the direction required. Although it doesn't tell you the safest route to take, and that sometimes does annoy a lot of blind people, it does guide you there using audio prompts and music, and also tells you how far you are away from your destination. Now, he says, I have not gone into great detail about the app, but I would instead recommend that you guys check out the podcast themselves. Definitely worth a listen. One final point is that during the demonstration, the podcast host, who is called Jeff Thompson, advises that the app should be used with earphones that will not impede normal hearing for obvious safety reasons. Once again, this is another example of the leaps and bounds being made in technology for visually impaired people. Long may it continue. Keep up the good work, and until huskies can be trained as guide dogs, let's wish away the snow. Best regards, Billy Burrell. Yeah, totally agree with that, Billy. And that's a really important point about headphones. You know, don't wear big headphones. Do not do that when you're using this kind of app. I would strongly advise against doing that anyway. I don't know many blind people that actually would do that, because you need to hear what's around you. I think we all get that. But of course, the point with this app is that you do need stereo. As you were saying, Tim, you need it to be in stereo for it to work. So the best options out there are the bone conduction headphones that you get. So the Aftershocks ones, those are really good for that. Or the Apple AirPods. And the reason I suggest the Apple AirPods is because even though they are in your ear, they don't block the sound out. I don't know what it is, but they just manage to keep the outside noise alive enough. And I found when I'm navigating around, having them in, especially both ears, I actually prefer having both ears in when using the AirPods. So, but the EarPods, the ones that the wired headset, I think that does knock out more. Because they're a bit quieter, I tend to shove them further into my ear.
Into your brain.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, do tell us your thoughts on this. We'd love to hear about them. Email us and tell us what you are thinking about the app if you've tried it, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We're going to move on because we've got a lot to get through this hour, and in particular, last week we talked about the HomePod, and you might remember Garth Humphreys joined us from Australia to tell us all about the HomePod, his thoughts on it. Bit of an update on that one, Sean. Apparently Garth sent his back, is that right?
He did, yeah. I spoke to him and asked him, and he did not keep it. He took it back. He just said he loved it. He thought it was great. He just thought the price, he couldn't really justify it.
Well, we did get an email from Matthew. Oops, no, come on. Honestly, this is ridiculous. Honestly, it is ridiculous. We'll get to them later. But yes, Matthew did get in touch with us, and he said, hello from snowy Coventry. He said, first of all, thank you so much for the fantastic program you put out. I am particularly impressed with your tight production ethos, the way the show is always 59 minutes long, and the way the intro is perfectly timed so that the theme music can fade back up just in time to catch the end bars. This, in my mind, is what sets a radio show apart from a podcast. So please don't lose those core values.
Wow, thank you.
Who do we thank for that? Who do we thank for this? I don't know. I mean, we could all take the credit.
And we will.
No, I'll take the credit. I think that's me.
No, I think I'll take it. Thanks. I was here first. Right. I'm also delighted with the new hosts, Sean, Tim, and Lydia. You're new, are you, Sean? Oh. You're new, are you, Tim? Well, there you go. They're all fantastic, apparently. According to Matthew, please keep them all. And Potter's Picks isn't too bad either, although I do sometimes struggle to make out Stephen's Scottish accent.
No, now I've got to jump in here, Matthew. I totally agree. Is it Porter or Potter you are saying? I have no idea.
Okay, so here's what you need to do.
Oh dear, I'm scared.
Listen to what I'm saying. Potter. Does that sound like Porter?
They both sound the same. I don't know. What's the difference there? Spell it. You'll have to do that every time.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Introducer is Harry's cousin. Maybe people understand better that way. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, Matthew, it is definitely clear Porter. Sean, we can't help you.
That doesn't clear it up at all. Okay, thank you.
Actually. But moving on. Matthew says, I thought I would record some audio about the HomePod to follow on from last week's review, as I feel as though it gets a lot of bad press. So here is what Matthew says about the HomePod.
Well, hello, Tech Talkers. This is Matthew Horspool coming to you from Coventry. I wanted to talk about HomePod because it seems to have got rather a lot of negative press, and more so, I think, in the blind community than in the tech community at large. Now, I've got a HomePod, and I haven't got an Amazon Echo or a Google Home, although I have used a Google Home, so I do know what we're comparing it with. And I just want to make the point that, yes, it's expensive, and if you're looking for a smart speaker, it may not be the smart speaker for you, but the speaker in this thing, or the speakers, because it's, you know, 360 degrees and all that, is just phenomenal, and it blows any competition out of the water in terms of the sound quality that it has. And not just the sound quality, but the spatial awareness that it has and the way it's able to throw things at a room. I should point out, it does throw things out in mono. It's got lots of speakers, but it doesn't do stereo from the one speaker. It does only throw out in mono. But I mean, it's the best mono. And if you want a speaker, and this is kind of why I got it in the first place, I wasn't terribly interested in the smarts. The smarts would be nice, I suppose, but, you know, not all that bothered. But what I did want was a nice speaker that I could listen to music on in the kitchen. So I was actually going to go and buy a docking station. And I was probably going to spend, probably not 320 quid, but maybe 180, 200, somewhere around there, on a really decent high-end docking station. Might have even gone up as high as 250. So when the HomePod came out, knowing that it supported AirPlay, and I have an iPhone, I sort of decided, well, look, does it really matter that it's not all that great at its smarts? Because I didn't want smarts anyway, really. The other thing I would say about HomePod that doesn't seem to have got very much attention is this. The way it picks up the wake word, the H-E-Y Siri word, is just phenomenal. I mean, I can have this thing on absolute maximum, and I can say H-E-Y Siri, and it will still hear me. It's in my kitchen, which doesn't have a doorway. I can be at the top of the stairs and shout down, you know, H-E-Y Siri, and it'll hear me. I can be in my dining room and say it, and it will hear me. And it hears me with enormous accuracy, even when I've got things going on. You know, I can have a tap running and boiling water and, you know, the sound of the gas and the sound of the microwave or the oven or whatever. And it very rarely does it have a problem understanding me. It does have a problem doing things. It's not very smart. But with software updates, it could get better. And the final thing is that I say I used a Google Home. I use it at a friend of mine's house. I went back to that friend's house the other day. And there were two things I noticed. First of all, if I thought the music sounded pants before, really did sound really rather pants now. I mean, it was awful. The second thing was that although Google Home was undoubtedly more intelligent, I wasn't using much of the intelligence in day-to-day, so I was mostly asking it to play music and skip forward and skip backwards and do things like that. And Siri can do all that. And what it gained in intelligence, it lacked by the fact that a lot of the time it just didn't hear me say H-E-Y Google or whatever the word was. So it's pricey, it's not smart, but I don't think it deserves the 0-star ratings that it gets.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Matthew. Very interesting thoughts in there. I know, Tim, you were kind of nodding along audibly. I could hear you in the background, especially around the point he made with saying H-E-Y Siri, as he says, from wherever you are in the house. It seems to be that it does pick up, so that's a good thing. But in terms of smarts, yeah, it, as he says, it's not the most smartest speaker, but what are we expecting? And I think that's the point with this, isn't it? You know, what do we expect from this thing? Most of us have got Amazon Echoes. If you've got an Amazon Echo and you buy a HomePod, well, you're kind of set for life, aren't you?
Well, look, I think none of them are particularly smart. I've got to say that.
Oof, right.
Oof. No, even the Googles and the Amazons, I don't think they're incredibly, you know, AI intelligent.
They're smarter than me.
Well, yeah. That goes without saying, Stephen. But the intelligence tag seems a bit. But to be fair, I agree. Everything Matthew said there, I agree totally. But I don't think Apple are saying this is, you know, this is a smart speaker. Like Garth said in the last week's review, he sees it as a control mechanism for skipping volume and all that. So I totally agree with that. The sound is fantastic, but the criticism I think they can't get away from is that the connectivity, not having some sort of line in, headphone jack, input jack, something like that for a speaker, which sounds, as everyone has agreed, fantastic. I think that's a huge limitation. It does have Bluetooth built in. I did read that on the box. Bluetooth 5 is built in, but you can't use Bluetooth at the moment. Maybe they will bring that in, but being Apple, who knows? So the connectivity for me is the only criticism I've got about it. I'm not sure that everyone is being super negative about it, though. All the reviews I've read or heard are saying how good the sound is, but they're just not sure, you know, it has those limitations make it worth a purchase.
Yeah, its sound is amazing, its responsiveness is amazing, and he does make a great point, like you said, Stephen, that sometimes you do have problems with the Echo or the Google speaker trying to get it to listen, even especially at the louder volumes. And so to have the HomePod be able to hear you, you know, and be able to respond to you is definitely a good selling point, I think. And I've heard that from a lot of people that it does respond to you better, I think, than Echo and Google do. And like Sean said, I don't know that this was meant to be an intelligent device necessarily. They developed this long before even the Echo was first announced. And so I can almost see somebody at Apple headquarters saying, oh no, now these other speakers are out there. We're trying to design this Sonos competitor, and now there's these smart things out there. I guess we need to add Siri to this. You know, I can almost see that happening because of how long they've been developing this. And so Siri is going to have to be an afterthought. Intelligence in this is going to be an afterthought. And thankfully, that's a software update that can be done over time. And so they can add more things that are similar to the Echo and the Google. And, you know, if they do turn on the Bluetooth ability of it, add some other key features to it, I think it might start to be worth its price point. But like Sean said, the connectivity of it still makes it a little questionable. So I don't know. I think it still remains to be seen, but the audio quality is, you know, definitely above the rest.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, actually. And I think that's the key point. I don't think it matters too much. I saw a few criticisms of it. No, it's not smart enough, so I'm sending it back. Yeah, but it's a great speaker.
Yeah,
you know, what are you buying it for? You know, if it's to play music, which essentially is what it's for, then, you know, why wouldn't you want it coming out of the best speaker? If that's what you think it is, if you sent it back because you thought the Sonos was better or you thought something else was better, that's fair enough. But I think to say it because it's not smart is a bit of a strange reason for sending it back. Anyway, yeah, again, tell us your thoughts if you've got one. You can email in and follow Matthew's conversation on this Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. Right, finally, I can say it. Emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
My question is, why is there a doorbell in it? I don't get the doorbell. Anyway, right, to the emails.
That's the postman.
Yeah, but it's an email.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's a virtual postman.
Virtual postman, yeah. Right, Ian's been in touch. He says, hello, guys. I must say I was very disappointed with the item about the Calibre download app. Given that the huge majority of people who are likely to be using the app will be using their remaining sight or a screen reader, I fail to understand the decision to make the app self-voicing. Surely it makes much more sense to use the phone or tablet's already installed screen reading capabilities rather than reinventing the wheel. It also seemed that the gentleman being interviewed had no idea that having VoiceOver or TalkBack running has an effect on the way text is input. Surely any app for people who have some degree of sight loss, which requires that the program which makes the phone accessible be switched off, is a bad idea. Incidentally, I didn't have any problems with the latest version of Windows 10.
Oh.
Interesting point. That was, of course, the follow-up to the points we were making around Windows 10 last week and issues we've been having. Thank you for that, Ian. Yeah, we're going to forward your email, as we do with all our comments in regards to this, to Calibre to get them to respond to you directly, which seems the most appropriate way. There probably is not going to be an easy solution to that one, I don't think. Irene's been in touch, and she says, for many years, I have been carrying out internet banking using various versions of JAWS on a desktop machine. Currently, I'm using Microsoft Windows 10 and JAWS 2018, both fully updated. On the 19th of February, there was no problem with access, but when I attempted to read my bank account at Halifax Bank on the 22nd of February, things were not working well. No longer was column information available to me, either by voice or on the Braille display, and typing T for table told me there were no tables on the page. After cursoring down past many headings and names of months, Having ticked February, I eventually located a table, but Jaws read straight along the whole line with no indication, either in speech or on the braille display, as to whether sums had been paid in or withdrawn. There being no column information. On my inquiring on the bank's helpline, I was informed that there had been no alterations made to the main site, which I had been using during the last fortnight. I was wondering if other Jaws users have encountered this problem. Well, Irene, you've obviously done the right thing. You've contacted the bank. They've said that there's been no changes made. Could this be a Jaws problem, guys? Could this be an issue? Maybe a small update on Windows side? I mean, there are so many factors in this, aren't there?
Yeah, there are so many factors that could be involved here, Stephen. I mean, it could be a update with Jaws recently, could be Windows, as we know Windows is updating seemingly constantly nowadays. And so it could be anything. If she hadn't been told by the bank that there had been no recent updates to cause this, I would have said that it was something with the web design of the bank, because if she's able to read tables on other websites, as usually as she has or normally as she has with Jaws, and it's only this particular website that she's having a problem with, I would say that they've done something with the table structure on the web design of the page. But if they are serious that they haven't changed anything recently, then I don't know. Could be an update somewhere else. I would maybe talk to Freedom Scientific, see if maybe they can give her some idea of what's going on as well.
Well, I think let's see if any of our listeners have had problems with it as well. You know, when they say they haven't made any changes, I tend to take that with a huge pinch of salt. Who knows? It's such a big, you know, organization. Maybe there has been some sort of, even if it's just a CSS change, you know, a styling change that could have an issue. I would say, just as a last ditch attempt, why not try a different browser? If you're using Chrome, try Edge and Narrator, or try Firefox. Just mix it up a little bit and see if that helps. Sometimes I've had an issue with a website in one browser and I've used another one and it's handled differently. But that's a bit of a stab in the dark. I'm more likely with Tim to say that this is probably down to something they've done on the website, but let's see if anyone else is having the same issue.
I know you don't have a separate podcast of your own, Sean, but if you did, it would definitely be called A Stab in the Dark. I think that's just a podcast name for you. But you're absolutely right, actually. And I think the browser point is a good one, because I've noticed this, that some things work very well in one browser, less so in another. And there really is no reason as to why some things just change. And, you know, you're right, because there can be changes made to websites, but they can be very small. It could be a very small update, and it's not something that the bank would even consider themselves, or any company would consider to be a major update that could affect accessibility. But that's why we always would ask companies, you know, to consider getting user accessibility done by blind people.
Yes, it does help.
You know, it would make a big difference, yeah. Okay, let's go to Hazel. I hope we get a response for you there, Irene. Anyone else using Halifax Banking, do tell us your thoughts. Hazel's been in touch. Now, this is quite a long email, but I want to go through it because it's a very interesting one, actually. Hazel says, "Hi there, guys. I've not listened to what I'm sure is an excellent show, but I'm fascinated to learn that you have been discussing the merits of the Opticon, or in some programs, what it actually is. Evidently, you're all too young to know."
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes,
thank you very much for thinking we're too young.
Yeah. Hazel says, "I bought my first Opticon in 1977 and began training on the 5th of September in that year. When I first heard of such a piece of equipment, I went nearly crazy to get it. I was sure I'd be able to use it, and on this assumption, which I now know to be completely crazy, I went to St Dunstan's to see one of these amazing objects. It was shown to me by a lady, I think her name was Alison, and I took with me a book, a Beatles biography, and a typed letter from which I said I must read one word from each. She told me I probably would not manage this, as when you're taught to read with the Opticon, you begin with very simple letters. Well, I was having none of it, and I read a word from the book and typed letter. I now understand what this lady meant, because in fact I taught Opticon several years later. It's about the size of perhaps a cassette recorder or a large portable radio in today's terms. It has a little finger pad on it with 144 pins. There is a handheld camera attached by a cable. This camera has two little lamps in it, and the idea is that if you keep your left hand as flat and as relaxed as possible, put your first finger onto the pin pad, again relaxing it as much as possible, then with the camera in the right hand, you gently roll it over each letter, word and line of print. So, for example, you see a capital T. The first bit that goes under your finger will be the left bit of the bar at the top. You keep moving, then the vertical line you feel, and lastly the rest of the top bar. Of course, reading with the Opticon is very slow compared with what you can do today with modern technology, since you will, in effect, only see one letter at a time. One of the things as teachers we would ask a prospective student during an assessment was several questions. Do you read Braille? Can you distinguish shapes easily? Do you like reading? Now, these weren't definitive things, and some people had to use an Opticon for work, in which case they didn't need to read very fast. I didn't have to use it for work, merely pleasure, and I did. I read long books with it, as I appeared to be the fastest reader in the West, certainly over 100 words per minute at one point.
Wow.
I managed to read the Bible all the way through at least four times. I read magazines, newspapers, handwritten letters, and even improved my own handwriting. Wrote my own envelopes too. And the post reached where I sent it. Sorry if that sounds like a brag, it's not meant to be, but I'm simply describing what an Opticon did for me. I used to be at many of the shows for technology and whatever there is today. Nothing looks so fascinating as someone who is blind reading print. For example, I was sent somewhere one day to demonstrate something quite different and was told that there was going to be some kind of film made of it. I was early, and I sat down to read my newspaper, like you do, and some cameraman from ITV walked in and asked what I was doing. I told them and showed them the Opticon, and it was for this reason I found myself in News at 10 one night. Then I was asked by someone in the Jordanian royal family, who was patron of a blind society and a man, if I would be willing to go over there and teach some of their English-speaking students the Opticon. Well, of course, I was I ever willing? It was an interesting 9 weeks I spent over there. Do I still use it? Yes, I do. Not for reading books, even I have caved in, although I do read the occasional one. Mainly I use it for packages, post, and anything else about which I want to know. Is there anything else quite like it? No. It's me being pedantic, I'm sure, but as many people say, at least you could touch a printed book and smell it. But not only that, you can know the layout of a page, where the page number is, on the top corner or bottom in the middle. You can read a TV screen, as I did in Australia, alone, and wanted to know what movies they had on in the hotel. I have continued to buy them and have a little family of about six Opticons. I wouldn't be without one. Kindest wishes, Hazel. So that's quite a long email, but that is quite a story. And how how independent Hazel became as a result of that device.
The more I hear about this, the more fascinating it sounds. Thanks a lot for that, because it really does explain it a little more detail of how it actually works. I can understand why, you know, you need training to use that. I just assumed that, you know, you'd hold the camera over it and the letter would just pop up in its entirety. And it seems like it's not quite that, but it does seem like a really interesting bit of tech.
And the way that Hazel puts it in perspective to show exactly not only how it works, but how you can use this in your everyday life and how important it can be. And as we can hear from her email, just, you know, how well written and well spoken she is. And I would attribute that to her learning something like this, because she has learned print and the written word and handwriting and that object recognition. And so, you know, she's been able to, you know, really use this much to her benefit over the years, it sounds like. And so, yeah, very, very good on her. Fantastic email.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Hazel. Narina has also been in touch as well. And she says, I enjoyed the latest Tech Talk podcast, which I listened to yesterday and heard you read out my email that I sent reference to the email address for Microsoft, which you gave out, which was actually for organizations and not individual customers, which, as I said, is a great shame. I know you said about me trying out Be My Eyes on the iPhone, but the problem with that for me is that I don't access the web via a phone. I only use a desktop computer. Dare I say that I do have a Synaptic phone, which I bought about 6 months ago, so I could take the step to the 21st century, but personally, I would rather use a desktop computer for my emails and using the web. I'm still learning Synaptic, but not really interested in social media. Therefore, Stephen, I will not be able to come back to you all with any feedback on Be My Eyes. Sorry, but do keep up the good work, and I look forward to next week's programme. Best wishes from Narina. Well, you know, that's the thing. It's all about choice. It's what works for you. And I have to say, you know, we all have our ways of doing things. Sean just uses his iPhone for everything.
Correct.
And that gets him into all kinds of trouble. But, you know, it's choice, isn't it? That's what it's about, guys. It's about all of us just having the choice to pick out the technology that works for us. Unfortunately, in this case, it does mean Arena can't benefit from the Be My Eyes app. But, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with using a synaptic phone and a desktop computer, is there?
Well, I don't think it's even that. I want to know why Microsoft, if that email, that accessibility email is for organisations only, why are they not coming back to her with an email she can contact if she's got questions? Mm. You know, that seems to be the logical step. I don't really get that.
Yeah, it would make sense for Microsoft to offer some other way for people to get in contact and ask their questions other than an organizational email. So yeah, that is definitely a good question. Hopefully somebody at Microsoft can maybe find a way to get people to access them better with those questions. But, you know, like you said, Stephen, it is all about choice. It is about comfort as well. If somebody's not comfortable getting into a smartphone or some other type of device, then why should you? You should do what's comfortable for you and what feels right for you and make that choice. And thankfully, in the day's day and age, we have so many choices. So that's very good.
Julie Rodaway has been in touch, a regular contributor. Hi, Julie. She says, hi, guys. You're in trouble yet again, Stephen. Oh, dear.
Oh, good.
But then she brackets it with smile, so that's good. She says, having heard about these on one of your podcasts, I just had to go and try them at my local hi-fi dealer. She's talking about the Bose Sound Like Micro speaker. She says, I was blown away for the size. They're amazing. So my poor debit card has yet again been put into service, and it's all thanks to you. Oh, I wish I'd get some kickback out of this, but trust me, I don't. All joking apart, she says they are fantastic and I would highly recommend them to any listener. Well, thank you, Julie, and I hope you're well. Now, Alan has been in touch as well, and he says, hi, Tech Talk. Just getting in touch to say that I really enjoy your show and look forward to every week. Regarding your article on Skype not working with accessibility, I have recently installed the desktop version of Skype, and it uses all of the hotkeys and shortcut keys. You press the Alt key and go across to the option menu and enter, and then you will get a list of setup options for Skype, and the accessibility options are at the bottom of that list. To send a call, you press and the Control key and Q, and to answer a call, you press the Alt key and the Page Up key, and to send a video call, you press Shift, Control and R. To answer a video call, press Shift, Alt key and the Page Up key. I've not yet tried any Skype calls or video calls yet, but I'm hoping to do that soon. I hope that the new version of Skype that Microsoft are bringing out soon will have the accessibility features fixed, so blind people will be able to use the new version. I've also emailed Microsoft when they were going to bring out Seeing AI app on Android. They said they might be doing that soon. It would be good if you could do more news and features on Android on a regular basis. Keep up the good work, and I hope you can extend your show to 2 hours each week. In regards, from Alan McKee in Hereford. Well, thank you, Alan. Yes, we hope that too, but because I must admit, it's often quite difficult to fill this into an hour. But just to quickly run through your points, yeah, Skype, I mean, this is an ongoing conversation in Blind World, really, isn't it? That Skype, I mean, this is a strange thing about Microsoft, right? So they bring out Seeing AI and they bring out Soundscape, and, you know, they do amazing work on making things accessible. And then Skype comes along and it's just not great. What is it? And you know, again, with the Microsoft email thing that Narina mentioned, you know, they haven't quite sorted that out yet. You know, it seems odd, doesn't it? Considering how much attention they give to blind people specifically. And in other ways, things just get missed. It's bizarre. Is it just because it's such a big company?
Yes, I think that's exactly the reason. It's just the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. It's exactly that. And going back to the email there, Alan, is the desktop version is absolutely fine of Skype. That's the trouble. They are constantly nagging me. I'm running the desktop version as well. And as you said, the hotkeys work fine. But it's constantly nagging me to update to the latest version, which is the Windows Store version, which is where the accessibility problems are. So when they finally say, that's it, you haven't got an option not to upgrade, then if the accessibility problems are still there, we're in trouble. So yeah, the desktop version is fine. That's right.
And just on your point, Alan, regarding Android and doing more features, that is something we are definitely working towards. Riz Khan, who joined us a few months ago, I think, actually, on the show, is going to be joining us more regularly to talk about Android and Android apps and lots more besides, because I agree. I think we need to talk more about Android. So yeah, that is going to be coming soon. So hopefully that'll make you happy, Alan, and anyone else who's an Android fan. Renee has been in touch. Hello, all. I first want to say that I just love your Tech Talk podcast. Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
Even though I'm across the pond, most of the information is relevant to the blind and partially sighted people all over the world, and all of you have such a great chemistry with each other. I really like Claire's picks. Yeah. We fake it till we make it. Really like Claire's picks also. Yes, Claire isn't with us actually for the next couple of weeks, but yes, it's good to have Claire on. And Tim lives right over the border from me in Minnesota. I enjoy listening to his Life After Blindness podcast as well. Isn't that nice?
Thank you, Renee. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Loving the jingles. We always get a mention for the jingles.
All about the jingles.
Yeah, everyone loves the jingles. Well, as far as Blind Shell and the phone itself goes, Renee says, I think it has quite a few benefits. Seen as the majority of blind and partially sighted people are older, this phone is easier to use, costs less, and is probably more than enough to meet their needs. Personally, on a different point, I think Steve Jobs was a freaking genius.
Oof.
That's the words here. I do everything exclusively on my iPhone using VoiceOver. You'll get on with it, Sean.
God bless you.
I am totally blind and always have been an Apple person. I cannot imagine my life without it. And like most people, we only use about 10 to 15% of these devices' capabilities. These are just my random thoughts on the subjects above. A reply would be greatly appreciated if you have the time. Well, consider it done. Thank you for all that you do. Keep up the great work, Renade and Sharade, who I believe is the guide dog.
Thank you.
Chippewa Falls
very
in
nice.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, very much. Nice. Thank you, Renee. And I think that's my favorite email of all of them so far, I believe, yeah.
It's funny that, isn't it?
Funny how that works.
Bizarre. Yeah. Well, that's your emails, guys. Now, we did get a call in last week that we couldn't get to because of time when Lydia was with us. Dave got in touch. Let's hear what he had to say. Now, I know you're from County Durham.
That's right.
And you've been listening to us since November, is that right?
November last year.
Wow, and you stuck with us despite
all
our nonsense.
Thank you.
We appreciate that, yes.
So what do you like about the show? I won't ask who you like the most, because that's unfair. What do you like the most is the question.
I've been involved with technology all my life, ever since I used the Corbett was 16. And that's what I just shows you how old I am, isn't it?
Yes. Not as old as us, though, so you're all right.
So, tell us what kind of technology you use then, David.
I use Google Talkback on the phone, and I use JAWS. I'm a full-time JAWS user, and I also use NVDA as well.
Ah, right.
And you got in touch with us because you'd heard me ranting away about the lack of resources out there that there are to help people get into things, especially like JAWS. And you found that as well, David, haven't you?
It actually caused me to do a bit of investigating.
In what way?
And what did you find? Yeah.
What I did find, which is quite interesting, I found a video that somebody had done in Australia, which was talking about how to navigate while the document using JAWS.
But that was it, really, wasn't it?
And that's what I found.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, guys, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you're going to learn JAWS, they're just... there's not that much out there to teach you the very basics. I mean, yeah, there's lots of documents, there's lots of websites, I'm sure, but they're all very technical. That's the problem.
Yeah. You need to be fortunate enough to live near a resource, don't you? It's quite a postcode lottery in terms of learning JAWS and other NVDAs.
Yeah.
NVDA, you know, I must admit, I've used NVDA a few times, and what I found, it does have its good points and its bad points.
Mm-hmm. So what do you find good about it?
The fact that you run it on a pen and you don't need to install it. That's
yeah, so it's nice and easy. So you like the ease of use with it.
That actually makes NVDA shine.
And what is it that they could improve on then for you?
Well, the add-ons is a big improvement.
Okay.
So you can install add-ons on it with NVDA. I've currently got a few add-ons which is in my copy of NVDA at the minute. I've been having a look around on the internet and I found a few add-ons. Particularly the Eloquence add-on.
Right. So you get the Eloquence screen reader as one of your options on NVDA?
I have, yes.
Right. And you prefer Eloquence, do you, to the other ones? A lot of people do say that. They find it really responsive and just easy to understand. I know a lot of people do like that.
It is responsive, very responsive. So I found Eloquence plus also a few other ones, which is quite interesting. I mean, I found the DeckTalk synthesizer add-on.
Yeah, that's right. There are a lot of speech synths available for NVDA, which is when you consider that the default one it comes with is eSpeak, and a lot of people don't like that one. I mean, it's quite useful to have these extra options out there.
You've been using NVIDIA for a while now, haven't you, Sean?
I have, yes. I haven't used Jules now for a long time, so, you know, I am sort
of... A long time.
Yeah, years we're talking, so I am... Probably Jules 12 was probably the last one I had, so it's been a long time. But I'm not a power...
Quite a few years ago.
Yes, yes, definitely. I'm not a power screen reader user, I will say that. I don't use it as I need to for work, so I'm using it just for browsing and getting around. It does everything I need it to do, so I know there's people out there that say, I need Jules because of this certain, the software I use at work or something, and that's where Jules comes into its own. But for me, as just a home user, I find it NVDA just does everything I need.
I've spent a bit of time with NVDA the last couple of days. I've more or less not been using Jaws for the last couple of days. It does what you need it to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is actually quite funny, but when I was using the Elegance, I actually just think I was using Jaws for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, well, a lot of the keyboard shortcuts are familiar or exactly the same, aren't they? You know, it does make it easier to learn the different screen readers if the keystrokes are the same.
Right.
It sounds like you've got a good option there with NVDA, and it sounds certainly to me, from what Sean tells me and others have said, that there are more resources out there to learn that. So that does seem like a good option for you. Dave, it's been really good having you on the programme. I know you are a regular listener and I know you enjoy the show, so thank you so much for continuing to stay with us here on Tech Talk, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, no problem, excellent. I look forward to it.
Brilliant. Thank you, David.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Well, thanks for your call, Dave. Okay, let's get to the news.
News from the internet.
And there's lots of it this week. Oh, yes. Amazon has bought Ring, the doorbell company.
Good news.
That's big news.
Yeah, this can only be good. I think so.
Okay, why?
You don't believe us. Well, look, Ring is one of the best known video doorbell brands out there. Amazon, I mean, they got their fingers in everything. They're huge. They got the money to back it. They got the technology to back it. So it's only a good thing. They're going to better integration into the smart speaker. And also, perhaps they're going to take a step into more of the smart home devices. There could be a whole Amazon range here. So yeah, I think it's great news.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with it. Hopefully, accessibility with the app and the device itself still continues, which I'm sure it will, and can only get better.
I think it's more the Amazon Echo integration I'm interested in here. I think this is where it's going to go. I mean, it already has a little bit of that at the moment. If you've got the Echo Show, I think you can watch, you can see if someone's at the door, it will flash up and it will show you. I don't think there's any integration with the audio devices, the Echo Dot or the Echo, is there?
There is, but it's not really anything. I mean, what you want is to get a notification through your smart speaker as well when someone presses it, not just your phone, and to be able to talk to them through your smart speaker. I mean, that makes total sense to me, and you're not able to do that at the moment.
Yeah, I would have to think that's what they're planning to do, is integrate this even more with their Echo devices, more than just the show. And like you said, Sean, that would just make sense to do that, have that integration outside of just an app, be able to use the actual A-word app as well as the Echo itself to answer the door, answer the doorbell. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that integration.
Here's the dream, right? If someone walks up to your front door and it's able to recognize who that person is, tells you through your Echo device, that would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the Nest one, isn't it? That's one they demoed. It will tell you through your Google Home.
It must be coming there for them. I mean, because if Nest are going to do it or are doing it, then it's going to have to come to the other one, because that's going to be a clear... I mean, I know it sounds maybe something that blind people might feel better about, but I think anybody would want that feature. It's time for the segment I like to call...
It must be true, 'cause I heard it on the radio. It must be true, it must be true.
Yeah. because apparently, and this is rumour, Samsung are going to bring out their Bixby smart speaker in the second half of this year. It's going to be around $200, so probably the same in pounds. Saying possibly first half of 2018, although that's unlikely. I think it was a bit early for that. Probably second half, I'd imagine. Not much information about what the speaker will actually look like or what it will even be able to do, but presumably Samsung are looking to tie the device in as a central hub for its smart things, smart home system, in addition to all the usual stuff, smart speaker stuff does, like music and reminders and timers and trivia and all of that. What's interesting, though, is the guy who runs Samsung, I don't know what his name is because I can't find it here, but the man who runs it, Mr. Big Man, he said, I want to focus on premium for the upcoming speaker. Now, that could mean either a quality design or really good sound, and go up against the Apple HomePod, or alternatively, we might see more entry-level equivalents like the Google Home Mini and Amazon Echo Dot. But that means there's a third player now in the market here. What do you think?
You know what? The first thing I think is miss the boat. I don't know. What can they offer here that's not been offered already? I'm quite happy to be proved wrong, but I don't know. It doesn't excite me at all.
I don't know that if it's necessarily as much missing the boat in this, Sean, as just yet here's another company trying to make their home assistant worth something. When they first brought Bixby out on their Samsung phones, one of my first thoughts was, well, I wouldn't be shocked if this became a home device like an Echo sometime in the future. And here we are with this rumor. And so I'm not surprised by it. And again, I don't know that it's missing the boat yet because, yes, as we all agree, I think Echo is leading this charge so far. You know, Google's right there and Apple's trying to get into it, as we talked about earlier, that, you know, with the HomePod. And there are others in the space as well. But I think there's still space. There's room here for other competitors. I don't know that even though Echo is leading the charge as much as they are, I still think that we're early enough in this home assistant device area that I don't know. I think there's still competition to be had. I still think there's, you know, a top two or three to be had. I don't know that the, you know, second, third and fourth spot here is really that defined.
Well, we shall wait and see. But I tend to think that it might be, you know, I don't often agree with Sean. So there's some breaking news. But
now you say that, but I'm finding more often these days you are agreeing with me, Stephen. I like it. I'm changing your mind.
I don't think you're changing my mind. I think maybe I'm changing your mind. And maybe I'm leading you in the right direction.
We'll see.
Yes. another malicious rumor for you. Apparently, well, it's not very malicious in fairness, Apple are going to launch some new headphones this year. We might be seeing the working title is Studio Pods. I don't like that.
No.
That is not going to be what they're called. If they are, that company's finished. But yeah, Studio Pods is the nickname at the moment. Essentially, like the Beats headphones. I don't really get this. I mean, they own Beats.
Yes.
Why not just bring out headphones and say, oh, by the way, guys, look, we brought these headphones out under the name you're already aware of. Why separate this out? I don't get it. But I think the idea is that you've got the HomePod, you've got your AirPods, and now you'll have HeadPods or whatever. I bet that's what they're called. But yeah, that'll probably just got it. But yeah, that's probably where we're heading, I think. And I don't know what I think about that. Do we need this? This seems a category that's already in full, you know, there's enough out there. You go into an Apple store right now, and there are loads of choices of headphones. Why does Apple need to add this in?
The only thing I can think of here is that it's a branding thing, that they want to keep Beats Beats and keep Apple Apple, maybe, in a way, even though we know it all comes from the same company now. They want to have something that's a partner to the AirPods and something that's got that Apple branding to it and the technology of it with the special pairing and the way that the AirPods work. Maybe they want to have something that's, you know, a little bit larger size, you know, a studio type headphones, as it were, that, you know, that's larger than the AirPods. And so maybe it just comes down to branding and just keeping that separate and keeping Beats and what they do, you know, separate. I don't know. I don't know if it's that, if it's marketing. It's got to be something along those lines, because otherwise, like you said, Stephen, I don't understand why you would separate it.
No, I don't get it either. I don't know why you would want to separate those out.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I don't know. But hey, I'm not a successful business like Apple, so there must be something in there. They're doing something right.
I was going to say, I mean, they've almost got a trillion in the bank because of sales. bizarrely, not down to sales numbers. That's the interesting point. It's down to price point is the real reason why Apple are successful.
Yeah.
It's not because they sell more units than anybody else. And that's actually an important point to maybe be aware of. Maybe that's a good one to leave with today. You know, it's not all about the numbers in that respect. So I don't know. We'll see what comes of it. I just wanted to leave you with one final thought of mine. I've mentioned in the past few weeks and months that I've been wanting to learn Braille. And I was on Twitter the other night and I spotted a retweet from someone who pointed me towards a website, well, actually a YouTube channel called In One Lesson. That's the name of the channel. And it focuses on everything you could think of. I mean, all kinds of different things. How to cook, boil an egg, or how to, you know, whatever it might be. And it's all in one lesson. This one I found, or was pointed to, was about learning grade one Braille. And I was a little bit surprised because grade one Braille, I've often thought would take a good few months to learn. But the way this guy, and I don't know what the guy's name is, but what the guy does is he talks you through and explains how the letters work. And essentially, if you learn, and I won't go through it all, but essentially, if you learn the letters A to J, you've pretty much mastered Braille. Now, when you hear that, you think, what? Really?
Yes.
But then when he goes on to explain why, you kind of go, ah, okay. And I tried it, and I think I've got a good handle on Braille, so I'm quite impressed. Actually, it all seems to have worked out rather well, and you know, it's a good lesson. There are also continued lessons on grade two. There's actually a 7-part series on that, so you're not going to do that in one lesson, because apparently there's 64 contractions that you have to learn. 64. So, you know,
that doesn't sound like a lot, Stephen. You could do that in an afternoon, surely.
Yeah, I tell you what, you go first.
Why not?
Well, I got to say, I think you're right. Look, this is a great resource. Braille resources are seemingly so difficult to get lately. I couldn't get hold of any when I needed to try some. So, but yeah, grade one's, well, obviously it's a great place to start being grade one. But I picked it up in the afternoon, just being able to type the alphabet. I was using an app called mBraille on the iPhone. I was able to text and tweet using that far quicker than using the screen keyboard after just one day of grade one. And I've totally forgotten it now, because if you don't keep it up, it's gone. It's one of those things you need to do every day. But yeah, yeah, exactly. A resource like this is so good.
That is it for our show this week. Tim, Sean, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we shall catch you again next time on Tech Talk. Just a quick reminder, if you want to keep in touch with us, you can do by emailing techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Like Matthew did earlier, you can send some audio as well. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what you think about what we're talking about. Have you got a view you'd like to share? Email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll catch you next time. Don't forget the podcast.